Hello, AJT readers. I am Ariel Cimino, an assistant professor of surgery at the University of Chicago and an AJT editorial fellow. Today, I'm excited to welcome you to a specialty podcast focusing on kidney utilization and organ procurement organization performance. I am joined by Dr. Amit Mathur, who's a professor of surgery and director of transplant quality and compliance at Mayo Clinic, Arizona, and the current chair of the OPTN MPSC Performance Monitoring Enhancement Subcommittee. I'm also joined by Dr. Raymond Lynch, Professor of Surgery and Director of Transplantation Quality and Outcomes at Penn State. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you
for having us.
So let's start off by contextualizing this topic. Recently, there has been an increased focus on OPO performance. In 2021, new CMS guidelines regarding OPO assessment went into effect. Dr. Mathur, can you summarize these changes and the rationale behind them for us?
Sure. And Ariel, thank you for having me on this discussion with the AJT readership. I'll be speaking in my capacity as somebody who performs research on organ utilization as well as a transplant surgeon for liver, kidney, and pancreas. I am the current chair for the subcommittee from MPSC looking at performance monitoring enhancement, which really has more to do with transplant programs rather than OPOs. But I think that the OPO metrics are an important step and an important development in the transplant ecosystem. But back in November 2020, CMS released a final rule that really changed what the minimum performance thresholds were for OPOs. Specifically, the OPOs do risk decertification if they do not meet the minimum performance threshold for their conditions of financial coverage. What the metrics really look at is they hold OPOs accountable for their donation rate and the organ transplantation rate. But importantly, the metrics are based on a new type of denominator. So in the past, OPOs were held accountable based on a standardized donation rate and sort of self-defined eligible deaths as a denominator by which to be judged. However, now the metrics take into account a new type of denominator that is derived from more standardized national data, and they use what's called the calc method. So that is based on the National Center for Health Statistics states that the deaths were from an age, cause, and location consistent with what would be needed for organ donation to occur. So this is a big change, but because it provides a little bit more standardized definition of what is the donor potential. But most importantly, I think the accountability aspect is very serious, because if OPOs are not meeting the threshold standards for what is called the third tier, there are three tiers of the metric that they've outlined, they could really risk decertification in 2026. And then their territory could be taken over or reassigned to another OPO, which would be a dramatic change for our environment, given that there are 56 OPOs in the country.
I agree. I think this is something that is long overdue, and it's really welcome. I think, you know, the idea of consequences and of the risk for decertification has caused some consternation for some, but there's also some real enthusiasm for it. And I think that, you know, the metric, as Amit outlined it, it doesn't require that any OPOs be decertified. The number that the metric demands be decertified is zero, because there's a confidence interval around both those performance measures. And so as long as you're doing what your peers are already doing, you're within the confidence intervals range of the median, then you are considered to be in the next tier up. So your point estimate may put you in tier three, but your confidence interval may reach all the way up to tier one. Now, eventually, all the OPOs, the performances hopefully will be within a very close margin of each other, and that would bring the whole country up. So I think the point is not decertification. The point is standardizing and bringing everybody to a homogenous level of recovery of donors.
Thank you both for explaining that for us. Now, when we're talking about any sort of assessment, it's important to look at the actual data that's collected and the effectiveness of the outcomes reported. And Dr. Lynch, your paper, Procurement Characteristics of High and Low Performing OPOs, as seen in the OPTN SRTR data, addressed these ideas. Could you summarize that for us?
It saddens me that you have suppressed your time at Emory so much, because it's actually our paper. I don't know if you'll remember that you helped with that. And so you're one of the authors on this paper. But it's exactly what you say. You know, we do have incomplete data on how well we're recovering donors around the country. But some of the stuff that's already completed is also not being well utilized. And we really saw the opportunity for that. So what we did was look at the hospital level records of donor recovery and use those to examine hospital characteristics, really, of different OPOs practiced. And at this point, I'd like to point out that, you know, we see OPOs as being clinical providers and organ procurement as being a clinical specialty. So when we looked at how well there was, you know, provision of equitable care across an OPO's area, what we saw was that the metric that Ahmed outlined using CalcDES as the denominator correlates really well with the fact that high performers, as visible to CMS, also do a great job in a variety of hospitals. They do better in small hospitals, in, you know, non-academic and non-trauma hospitals, and in hospitals that provide for more minority population and rural dwelling patients. So I think we're just starting to see the beginning of a new ecosystem of data and a lot of ways that we can reimagine and improve organ procurement.
So Ray, I have a question for you. So one of the things that is often a criticism of metrics that hold the organ transplantation rate of recovered organs as a point of OPO accountability. One of the criticisms of that, obviously, is that the OPOs don't do the transplanting. It's the transplant centers that do the transplanting. And there are guardrails, maybe, or barriers, maybe it would be a better term, in the system that really, I think, sometimes may serve as a disincentive to do a particular type of transplant. How do you think that plays into what the OPOs are being held accountable for? And do you think that's fair?
But, you know, transplant's a complex ecosystem. And I think just like in any other, you know, branch of care, look at cardiovascular medicine, where there's cardiologists and there's cardiac surgeons, or, you know, neurology versus neurosurgery, there's different perspective on the same patient population or in the same disease process. And people come at it from different assessments of what the risks and benefits of what one group might call conservative, another might call aggressive. There's always going to be some tension between the directives that both the centers and the OPOs have. And it's the job of, you know, the OPTN contractor to help navigate that and to balance our priorities. This is something that I think, you know, I'm very excited about the HRSA OPTN modernization initiative, because I think they're really starting to see that. And a critical area of this is, just like you and I know that the wait list that you end up with is a product of your referrals and how you manage those referrals to successfully get people through the evaluation process. The same is true on the OPO side. So the calc deaths are one measure of that, but we can also look at process data and how well the OPOs actually do their core, you know, practice as the best way to, I think, navigate differences that we see.
So Dr. Lynch, I just wanted to go back and just ask you, when we were looking at this paper, one of the points that I think you made that I think we can elaborate on for our listeners is that what you really found was that the old metrics we were using to assess OPOs weren't doing a good job of stratifying them. So, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like we were potentially doing a disservice in that we were reporting outcomes and data that made everyone look the same.
Yeah, I think that, and that goes back to, you know, without high quality data, you can't have a well-informed and a complete discussion. And this, you know, the purpose of the paper that we're setting out to discuss was we wanted to test this often heard concern that an OPO may not be able to recover donors because it lacks a, for lack of a better word, a market or a center that's willing to use them. Know that even before the era of broader distribution that started in 2020, you know, livers and kidneys were leaving DSAs where they were recovered about a quarter to a third of the time. And so there has always been the ability and the practice of organs moving around the country to places where they can be transplanted. So we looked at this with OPTN data over the 7-year period where we had the KDPI score as an objective and, you know, reliable way to look at the risk assessment of what kidneys would be. And the important thing is that this risk assessment was live at the time. The centers transplanting them, the OPOs recovering them, knew this score. So it wasn't a retrospective look at it. And what we found was that the lower performing OPOs recovered fewer older and higher KDPI donors than did the higher performing OPOs. But the ratio of kidneys transplanted per donor was the same. So what we're seeing is that the low performing OPOs still placed kidneys from their higher risk donors. It's just that they did fewer of those higher risk donors. And the critical element, I think, that goes back to Amit's comment is that there was asymmetric flow of organs. DSAs that were served by underperforming OPOs, they retained a higher proportion of their locally recovered higher risk kidneys than did those centers that were served by higher performing OPOs. So that core assumption that we set out to test was actually false. Underperforming OPOs are actually more likely to place their high-risk kidneys locally. And a good way to look at that is that there's a higher avidity among the centers in that region because they're getting a lesser local supply. Now, from the center's perspective, underperforming OPOs just aren't keeping up with the demand at the center level. And that's why we saw that flow of more higher KDPIs were going into DSAs with lower performing OPOs than were going in the opposite direction. And a critical element of this was that the importing high KDPI donors did not negatively affect the non-use, or what we used to call the discard rate. So imported kidneys did not negatively impact a local OPO's ability to recover and place those donors. All of this, I think, was really not visible with the old metric, and now it is. And that's what's cool about this. So if you look at one of the figures in our paper, you see that over a four-year period where SRTR had the acceptance rate ratio, basically a normalized measure of a center's aggressiveness, and we had the OPO's recovery performance using the old eligible death model, it was really a very striking difference in the clarity of the information. So in a given year, about half of all centers got a message from SRTR. You're above or you're below our expectations. But in a given year, it was from 20 to 25% of OPOs. So OPOs weren't getting given high quality information. And critically, two-thirds of the OPOs that are in the lowest performance quartile as visible now to CMS never received any notice in that four-year period from SRTR. So it just wasn't visible. And I think that everybody agrees that organ utilization is important. Everybody agrees that organ recovery is important. But we've had a sort of one-sided discussion because we've only had high quality data for one of those discussions so far. Now we have high quality data for both, and we can use it to come up with a start to finish approach to how we recover and utilize the organs best.
So Ray, what would you say in terms of how, because I mean, now you look at, the OPO reports that have been released by CMS, and they released the 2022 reports, relatively recently. There are 22 OPOs that are in the tier three. I would wager to guess that many of them had no idea this was coming going back into 2020. And very few of the tier three ones were in tier two or tier one before. So they're really in the same status they were probably in 2020. Well, going forward, I mean, obviously there's going to, if things don't change, there's going to be a tremendous amount of reshuffling in terms of who runs what geographies for donation. But what do you think the early warning system should look like for the tier three OPOs of the world?
So these data, one of the beautiful things about the count metric is that the data are accessible, right? This is something that can be known, and it can not just be known. You get an overall number of potential donors. You can break this down by demographics, by race and ethnicity, by age, by location, and you can combine this with the kinds of data that the OPOs are already collecting and supplying to the OPTN contractor, which is hospital level data. And so, I've been fortunate enough to help multiple OPOs to look at their data and see how they could use essentially the new data adopted by CMS to augment their practice. And we actually published our first OPO that we partnered with in the Indiana Donor Network in AJT. And it was remarkable to me how what was visible in calc was also true in the internal process data of the OPOs. So I think that you don't go looking for hard answers if you've already been told you're doing great. And getting that hard news that there are other people who are able to you know, recover more donors or recover at a higher rate than you, it's been unwelcome. But this has been, you know, first mooted with the executive order in July of 2019. So we're going on now 4 years of this. And I think that it's really incumbent on the OPTN contractor to have done a better job with preparing OPOs for this reality and for the expectation that they perform at the level of their peers.
Thanks. You know, Dr. Mather, just going high, reemphasizing the point that you brought up, you had an invited commentary to a couple of Dr. Lynch's papers, and you really asked specifically the question is, how do we ensure that organizations receive the right kind of feedback to improve their organ donation? And I think you both have alluded to it, but I was wondering if you could just get a little more granular as to, like, who do you think that responsibility falls to? Is it to the OPTN, who is balancing a lot of responsibilities? Is it to individual physicians, like you guys have alluded to, that you've been working with your OPOs? Like, where do you feel that that onus falls?
Well, I think that what's missing in the sort of metric space when it comes to what CMS measures, what the OPTN measures, is there isn't congruence at this time. And I think, you know, in terms of the national sort of transplant system, if you will, if you can call it a system, I guess sometimes it seems that it's not, there is a regulatory arm, which would be looking, the OPTN contractor typically is the one of the regulatory arms, and CMS is the other when it comes to OPOs. Now, CMS does not really, decertify transplant programs for performance issues. They can do it for other reasons, but not for, they don't have a metric structure anymore for transplant centers. So I think that it is incumbent on the system. And I think the SRTR really plays the role of reporter when it comes to public reports. When it comes to OPO performance, I think they need to have a bit more robust structure to be congruent with what they provide to transplant programs. And I know they're working on that. There's been multiple presentations by the current SRTR contractor to that effect, and to make things, I think, a little bit more holistic when it comes to reporting on OPO performance. But I think, you know, I'm thinking as a part of it, as a, you know, if I was in an OPO, and I'm not, but if I was in an OPO, I would want to know in advance that, you know, in a given 12-month period, I'm not recovering certain types of donors and my peers are. I would want to know that information. And similarly, I mean, we have those kinds of metrics for transplant programs. So, and you know, my program and many programs like mine, we study that information with great attention. So I think OPOs need that kind of information as well. And I think that, you know, from a national perspective, I think the SRTR is responsible for providing that framework at the national level. But I think also OPOs have some responsibility in this too. They need to be able to look at their own data and know, you know, if they are heading in a direction that is not the right one, and make adjustments accordingly. And, you know, some of this isn't just, you know, evaluating more, you know, saying yes to evaluating more donors. It's also putting the infrastructure in place to evaluate more donors and making business decisions to that effect. But any successful business is reliant on its own performance data and is going to be have ownership over that as well. So I think the national system needs to provide more of a framework for it, but OPOs need to have that too. Whether or not they can home grow it or not, I think it's probably a function of the size of each OPO. But there's clearly a need for, you know, more of a, you know, performance or a QAPI type dashboard for OPOs to look at this in a very granular way, similar to what we do in transplant programs.
I think that's exactly right. So one thing I'll just point out, Ariel, is that we like to differentiate between donation, which is the act that the donor patient and their family perform, and procurement, which is the clinical work that an OPO does. And OPO work is clinical work, and it generates a tremendous amount of data. OPOs are already partnering with at least a couple of large entities, and they have a common EMR. These data are available, and I think one of the, you know, the key elements that if you read the OPGN modernization initiative, the idea of dashboards is really important. And that's something that we're working on also. I think that it's important to be able to see not just, yes, I'm at where I want to be, or no, I'm not. It's where is the opportunity to improve relative to the median, relative to the 90th percentile. And so I think that those are going to be visible, not just from count data, but from the month to month recovery of different donor phenotypes and the process data that hopefully eventually OPOs will be sharing. I think it's, like Amit said, it's something that the OPTN can help out with, and it should be, making as a primary aim in the next 6 to 12 months. But it is also the work will actually get done by the OPOs.
Great. Thank you both so much. This is clearly a big undertaking that will be a work in process for multiple groups going forward. Kind of the last question I wanted to pose was, how do you think these new metrics will potentially affect organ donation and transplant rates in the future?
Well, what I hope is that there'll be more opportunities for patients to get transplanted. I mean, that I think is, you know, the goal of all of this. And I think that any amount of improvement, even small amounts of improvement, will be great. It will have major impact on the lives of patients. I think though that I think it stands to reason that if the current outline that CMS has put out in terms of looking at programs in 2026 and that survey cycle of recertification, it's very likely that some OPO territories will be reassigned. I don't know to what extent that will occur, but that's my prediction. But I think overall, this is a move to bring more successful donation events forward, more transplants forward, and I hope in the process of improving the process that transplant centers will receive more organ offers that are realistic to be used based on logistics and other kinds of things, as opposed to sort of late offers that are not particularly useful and then the organs get wasted. So I think that's what we want the system to move towards. I think this is a step in the right direction, but you know, we will see what happens as time goes on.
I'd agree. I think this is, the short answer is we've already seen gain. So we published on this in AJT, and the phenotype of OPOs changed and recovery improved in key areas that has historically been lagging, both geographically and, you know, by donor subtypes, older donors, DCD. So I think the news is good. I think moving forward, transplant rates are going to go up, but it's not just going to be OPO regulation that did that. There, to my mind, there's four pillars for this. The first is procurement, recovery of more donors. The second is utilization of all the usable organs. And that really is dependent on, you know, new technologies. And so we're seeing three of those in play already. And the fourth is regulatory. We need to incentivize providing the highest quality care to all patients. And that includes both donor patients and candidate and recipient patients. So I honestly think the future is really bright.
Well, that's great. Thank you both so much for joining me and sharing your expertise with our readers as part of this specialty podcast.
The opinions of the hosts of the show do not necessarily reflect those of the American Journal of Transplantation. For AJT highlights, you can find us online at amjtransplant.com. That's amjtransplant.com. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter.